From the KGOU studios, I'm Suzette Rolott, the Dean of the University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies, and welcome to Worldviews. Indonesia is comprised of over 17,000 islands. It's the fourth largest country on Earth, and it is the largest Muslim-majority nation in the world. It also has a reputation for diversity and tolerance.
Pluralism, democracy, and tolerance is our key issues at the moment in uniting the people of Indonesia.
Today, as NPR continues its exploration of Indonesia, I'll talk with Indonesia's Consul General, Nana Yuliana. But first, Rebecca Cruz and I will discuss how Pakistani women are finding independence and managing their security through a transportation app.
They're trying to provide a safer option for women to get around in the country, and it seems to be, for some at least, liberating them.
That's all coming up after news from NPR. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Gorlat. Rebecca Cruz, we're going to return to a common theme that we often touch on, and that is the plight of and the role of women around the world. And let's talk about what's going on in Pakistan. There's been a recent story about the launch of a new transportation app. Now, we're familiar with companies like Uber and Lyft that cater to people who want to be able to hail a taxi basically with an app on their phone and not exchange any cash. And it's very convenient. Well, this, of course, is worldwide. And there's a new app in Pakistan. Kareem is the name of the app. And it seems to be quite popular with the female population. About 70% of their clientele are women. And there's an interesting story about this regarding the fact that because public transportation is so concerning for many women in Pakistan, buses are very crowded. There's kind of this culture of, you know, being able to touch and grope, that women are taking these kinds of cabs, that the drivers are vetted and that they feel more secure. So can you tell us a little bit more about what we're seeing happening in Pakistan?
Yeah, it's a very interesting situation. And we have to, of course, remember that Pakistan is a relatively conservative country, very traditional. So to see women in the workplace is not perhaps the norm, although it's certainly, we're seeing it more and more. And so these cars and Kareem and a couple of others gives them the opportunity to leave their homes and safely do so to go to places of business. So it's been really an interesting development there. And as you mentioned, about 70% of Kareem's patrons are women. This wasn't intended, but Kareem has taken this and are learning from it and seeing the potential growth that could come from it. So they're doing a number of training sessions. Oddly enough, having to train the drivers not to look longingly in the rearview mirror and other things, but they're trying to provide a safer option for women to get around in the country. And it seems to be, for some at least, liberating them in some regards, although it's not particularly cheap. So there is some class divide that's going on here. There is another app by Kia, which is on a motorcycle. So that's a little bit different, but some who are able to maybe not afford Kareem but can afford this are doing that as well. So some options there to hopefully get to your place of business or whatever else you might be doing a little bit safer.
Well, so let's follow up about that motorcycle service. Now, there has been some feedback about this that women have been seen, you know, struggling, of course, given their clothing and such, being able to ride these motorcycles. So that isn't necessarily the best option. The reports that we're seeing anyway is that there is definitely a preference for an automobile. But you mentioned the training, you know, that drivers, and of course, I'm assuming that, I mean, we haven't necessarily seen that the drivers are women, that they're largely men, and they're being trained how to not basically make women customers feel uncomfortable. But you also mentioned the pricing out of the market that, you know, by our standards, it's not that expensive, but certainly in Pakistan, paying $1.50, the equivalent of $1.50 to ride to work is, you know, compared to a couple of, you know, 20 cents or so to ride a public bus is a little bit different. So there's still some significant gender and class issues here. But also, can we suggest that this isn't always the safest form of transportation? And I'm not referring to Pakistan, but I'm referring to some other places around the world. Like, for example, a recent case in Mexico where a woman caught one of these types of Uber-like transportation rides. It was called a Cabify, and actually her driver then took her off and raped and murdered her. So still raises questions, I guess, even though they're touting this, it still raises questions about the safety of women in certain parts of the world.
Absolutely. I think there are questions about women's safety in all parts of the world, and we certainly need to consider those. This is one attempt, and somewhat unknowingly an attempt, but it's turned into that to provide a potentially safer option. But it's preventing women or giving women an option where they're not being groped or harassed in public transport. So there are larger issues at play here, and certainly safety is an issue for women all over the world.
Well, and just to conclude on that note, that, you know, finding these ways around so that women can avoid these types of situations, as opposed to trying to work on, let's hope that what we're also working on is trying to minimize this kind of treatment in the public spaces to begin with. So anyway, a good reminder to all of us, I think. Thank you so much, Rebecca, as always, for being here.
Thank you.
We'd love to hear your thoughts about this discussion or answer any questions you might have. Leave your comments in the Worldview section of KGOU.org or like us, follow us, and interact with us on Twitter. We're at Worldviews KGOU and I'm at Suzek Rolat. Next, we'll talk with Indonesia's Consul General in Houston, Nana Yuliana. I'm Suzek Rolat, and this is Worldviews. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzek Rolat, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. All week, NPR's Ari Shapiro has been exploring Indonesia. Through his travels, we've met a female hijab-wearing stand-up comic who mocks fundamentalists, and people who fear intolerance is growing. I spoke with Indonesia's Consul General, Nana Yuliana, who was in Oklahoma to talk about her country. Consul General Nana Yuliana, welcome to Worldviews.
Thank you very much, Suzette.
It's great to have you here. You're visiting, this is your first visit to Oklahoma. You recently came to the United States as the new Consul General for Indonesia in Houston. And so you're representing this state as well, covering all of the Indonesian population here. But let's just refresh our memories a little bit about Indonesia, since I know that you represent your country here in the United States. Because I think we often forget that Indonesia is a string of islands. 17,000 islands make up the country of Indonesia, and it has the fourth largest population in the world, approximately 250 to 260 million people stretched across all of these islands, and also the largest Muslim country in the world, right? So what is it, now that you're here representing your country in the United States, what is it that you would like for us to know politically, economically, socially, culturally about Indonesia?
That's true that what you said, Indonesia is the biggest archipelagic country. If you look at the map, Indonesia is surrounded by waters, by ocean. We have 17,000 islands because archipelagic. Then there are a lot of small islands that we count as well. But there are five biggest islands in Indonesia, like in Java Island and then the Sumatra Island. We have also island in Kalimantan and then Sulawesi and Papua itself. So that five biggest island we have in Indonesia. I just arrived in Houston last month as a new consul general of Indonesia. So mostly what we are doing in representing Indonesia is promoting people-to-people connectivity, because of course the political affairs will be covered by Indonesian embassy in Washington, D.C. But people-to-people connectivity is very important because U.S. also has a very huge population. And through people-to-people connectivity is including also the university-to-university partnership. That's why our time to visit Oklahoma University is very significant as an element to strengthen the bilateral relation between Indonesia and also the U.S. And besides that, also, we have to do a cooperation in economic sectors. Tourism, trade, and also investment. Vice President of the U.S. just visited Indonesia this year in April. And also the Vice President Mike Pence emphasized the importance of economic cooperation between Indonesia and the U.S. So far, actually, the balance of economics is surplus in Indonesia. That's why Indonesia is one of the few countries that President Trump expect to increase import from the U.S. to Indonesia also, so we can get the win-win solution between the countries, between both countries in terms of economic sectors. During the G20 meeting in Hamburg, our president, both of president of Indonesia and also President Trump, met in July in 2017. And also there are two at least issues that they covered, especially in economic issues and also in terrorism cooperation. Indonesia has the best practices, best experience in countering terrorism. We suffer, we experience also the threat and also the attack of fundamental and radical groups. So through intelligence cooperation, this is also very important as a significant element to both countries, Indonesia and the U.S.
How is the relationship then with the U.S. regarding this issue? I mean, I know Indonesia has experienced some high-profile terrorist incidents. There was the very large bombing in Bali, for example. I mean, tourism is so important to your country that terrorism obviously it's never a good thing, but it's obviously something that really affects a major sector of your economy. Politically and on the issue of terrorism, how are you working with your neighbors on these issues?
We have a regional organization mechanism, what we call by ASEAN. ASEAN is a very strong regional organization in the region itself. So we have a very strong cooperation in countering terrorism. Besides that, we also have a very close cooperation with our neighbor countries, like with Australia, with the U.S. also in countering terrorism. We have what we call by Jakarta Center of Law Enforcement in countering terrorism and also in improving our capacity in dealing with the threat of terrorism. So through ASEAN and also through bilateral cooperation, we try to curb the radical groups and also counter the terrorist attack. Of course, when there was an attack, it will affect tourists coming to Indonesia. But from our data, it will only affect a very short time. And after that, the visitors come again to Indonesia. In our data, most tourists coming to Indonesia at the moment is from China and also from Japan and also the Australia, the neighbors' countries. We would like to invite more tourists also from the U.S. coming to Indonesia. Indonesia at the moment contribute a lot of budget to the human resources development. We would like to encourage also our students to study more in the U.S. And I also expect that the American students also can visit Indonesia, because Indonesia is one of the biggest in Asian, it is the biggest country in ASEAN. We have 10 member countries of ASEAN, and Indonesia is the biggest country. Jakarta also is the headquarters of ASEAN Secretariat. So for students or for young people and millennials who want to see how Indonesia grows, I think Indonesia is the right place to visit.
I noticed something that was very interesting, and that is your national motto, in fact, is unity in diversity, that you recognize that you're a very diverse country. You know, you've got a dominant Muslim religion, but you have over hundreds of languages, so linguistic and ethnic backgrounds in your very large country, and so there's a lot of diverse things to study and learn. But can you maybe speak on that issue of diversity a little bit, and the kind of the way in which you do find unity in diversity in Indonesia?
Yes, unity in diversity is our motto, what we call by Bhinneka Tunggal Ika in our language. The government, I mean state, recognize five religions, Muslim, Catholics, and then Buddhist, and then also Hindu, and also Konghucu. So those five religions, we recognize their religious days, and when they celebrate their religious days, it is a national day for us. So we respect the religious holiday. The second thing, of course, we have one language, Indonesian language, national language. Regardless that there are a lot of dialects, a lot of ethnic groups in Indonesia, but Indonesian language becomes an element to unite the people in Indonesia. Indonesia is a very democratic country at the moment. I think the third largest democratic country in the world after the U.S. and also India. And we also promote tolerance. Local language is also studied by the schools in Indonesia. So we leave them grow, but then there should be a united language. And a lot of activities also to unite the people. So pluralism, democracy, and tolerance is our key issues at the moment in uniting the people of Indonesia.
And you mentioned that Indonesia is a democratic country. It is a fairly new democratic country from the past couple of decades. So it's still making its transition. It's also a country that was hit hard by the Asian financial crisis back in the late 90s. So how is Indonesia coming along politically and economically in terms of its development today? Kind of where are we headed, I guess, in terms of the future of Indonesia?
Our growth at the moment is very stable and increasing. We reach 5.2% a year. This is based on the research from McKinsey Global Institute in 2013. Indonesia can be the seventh largest economy in the world. And then also we will have around 135 million members of the consuming class, meaning we have a big purchasing power, because half of the population will have a power in purchase goods and things. And also 71% of the population in cities producing 86% of the GDP. So by 2030, Indonesia will reach one of the important economic power in the world. We invest a lot at the moment in human resources development. Our national budget contribute structure is 20% now for human development. We send a lot of students all over the world. So this is a big investment for Indonesia to prepare our future generation and to prepare Indonesia in the world. Also, we reduce now a lot of procedures like for investment from a very long time to get the license for investor, especially for the foreign investors. But now with President Jokowi come to the administration, the investment service reforms conducted and 3-hour service to issue a license for foreign investment. The tax allowance, and also we have around 16 economic package now to streamline the process of attracting the foreign direct investment coming to the country. So we are very optimistic that Indonesia, in terms of political stability, at the moment I think Indonesia is one of the stable country, and we get support also from our neighbors, and also in terms of economy also. Our President Jokowi administration at the moment focusing on the infrastructure building. This is also to support our tourists coming to Indonesia.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Consul General Yuliana. It's really great to hear about your countries. Thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to my conversation with Indonesian Consul General Nana Yuliana. Worldviews is produced in partnership between KGOU and the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. Katie Holland prepares our research, Jacob McClellan edited this interview, and Sam Dupre produced the show. For Rebecca Cruz, I'm Suzette Grelott.